Our first guest this afternoon on Downtown has had quite a career as an actor, a bodybuilder, a pro wrestler, and a comedian. You know him from television shows like Car 54, Where Are You?, Knots Landing, and Max Headroom. Films like Serpico, Death Wish, and 3 Days of the Condor. He's the author of a terrific new memoir entitled From Harlem Hoodlum to Hollywood Heavyweight. We are pleased to be joined this afternoon by the multi-talented Hank Garrett. Hank, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
What a remarkable story you tell in this new book of growing up in Harlem, going through some tough times along the way, and then a career that's taken you to so many places and introduced you to so many people. And it started pretty young for you. Is this true? You were 12 years old when you sold your first joke to Eddie Cantor?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, that's a precocious young man there. You were having some trouble though. Your parents were pretty busy, and you were often left to raise yourself. And it took the mayor of Harlem and Sammy Davis Jr. to set you on a different path.
Absolutely, it was Sam that changed my life. In fact, I consider him my angel, and I was destined. According to all the information that Sam had about me, I was going to be either going to prison or die. And he was right. I was brought to him by the mayor. And my mom, who is a fruit and vegetable peddler with a pushcart, cried to him, the mayor, who was her customer. And he came to me. I was on the street corners with my fellow hoodlums, smoking. I was 12 years old. And he walked over and he slapped a cigarette out of my mouth. And I didn't know who he was, and I was going to throw a punch at him. And two massive bodyguards came toward me. I thought better about that, throwing that punch. And he said to me, your mom wants me to take you out tonight. And when you say that to a New Yorker, take you out, he's killed you. And I said, my mom's putting a contract out on me. And he said, no, stupid. He said, I'm taking you out this evening. He said, do you have a suit? And I said, yeah, I've got a suit. He said, wear your suit, but before you do, take a bath. I didn't know what to do. Anyway, I put on my suit, and he took me to the Apollo Theater, which was an all-African-American theater, and I looked at the marquee, and it was Sammy Davis Jr. starring, and we went into the theater, but we didn't go into the theater proper. We went to where the dressing room was, and he took me to Sammy Davis's dressing room, and there were hundreds of people milling around hoping to get a glimpse of Sam. Well, he took me right in, and he said to Sammy Davis, he said, this is the kid that I was telling you about. And Sammy said, sit down, man. I did. And he said, you're a tough guy, right? I said, yeah, I'm a tough guy. I'm 12 years old at the time. And he said, well, tough guys usually wind up with broken bones and scars. He said, you're beyond that. You're going to go to prison or you're going to die. And when he said that, I had a pistol. I had a 25 caliber pistol in my pocket. And it suddenly got very heavy. And he said, I'm going to do some stuff for you, man. And I don't want to hear any lip. You're just going to do. And I'm like, oh, what is that? He said, you're going to be a band boy for an orchestra. I said, I don't play an instrument. He said, no. Band boy, you're going to put out the music for each one of the musicians. And when the gig is over, you will collect all the stuff and put it away. And it was Bucky Millinder was the orchestra leader. Well, I did the show, and he said, you did a good job. I'm very proud of you, man. He said, here's your pay. And he gave me $50.
Wow.
And in those days, today it would be hundreds. And he said, get yourself some new kicks, shoes. My shoes were torn to shreds. In fact, I had a big rubber band around my left shoe to keep the sole on the shoe, or it kept flipping and just flapping. It was hanging down. Well, I did. I went to Floor Shine the next day, and I bought a pair of shoes for $15 from Floor Shine. And I gave the $35 to my mom, more money than she had ever seen in her life. And then Sammy got me, when I did that job, Sam then got me an introduction to a couple of hotels at the Catskills. And I was watching the top comedians, and I just started listening and watching, and I started writing some comedy, and I wound up being one of the key comedians working in the Catskill Theater, at the Catskill area.
And what did you, can you share what you learned from watching Sid Caesar?
Oh my God, I learned dialectic gibberish. I snuck into the theater that Sid was rehearsing in, and I was in top seat, out of the way, in the shadows. But at one point, I laughed out loud, and Sid yelled, "Who's up there?" And I stood up. He said, "Come on down here." And he saw I was a kid. "Sit right here, and you only laugh when I tell a joke. Don't pay any attention to the rest of the cast." And I learned dialectic gibberish, so much so that when I was working, I wound up working at the Copacabana in New York, and I wound up doing I was at the Sands with Tony Bennett. I was just opening that for 4 years. That's how far my meeting with Sam had taken me. And it was amazing because our opening night, I looked at, and right in front of me was Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Peter Lawford, and Sammy Davis Jr. And when I got finished, Frank gave me a standing ovation. Wow. And when he stood up, the entire audience stood up. And I was breathless. And after the show, everybody ran to see Tony. And I was standing there, and Sam came up to me. And he said, "You're a funny cat, but where do I know you from? Because you are so familiar to me." And I said, "Sam, I'm the kid that you said going to go to prison or die." And he said, "That's you?" I said, "Yeah." He hugged me, and we both cried.
What a great story. We're talking with Hank Garrett here on Downtown. I have to ask this, though. How does Hank Greenberg from Harlem end up as a pro wrestler known as Hank Garrett, the Minnesota farm boy?
Well, when I was born late in life to my parents, and my father, who was they're both immigrants from Russia. My mom was in her late 40s. My father was in his late 50s. And I went through a real horrifying time in my life. I was standing with my mother when I was about 5 or 6 years old, and a woman came up and said, "Is that your little boy?" And my mother said, "No, oh, no, 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 that's my grandson." And I said, "Whoa, my mother is my grandmother?" And but a couple of years later, there was a census taker at the door, and my father was talking to him. And he said, "How many people in this family?" And he said, "A woman and her three kids, my two half-brothers." And he said, "And who are you?" He said, "I'm an uncle visiting." My mother's my grandmother. My father is my uncle. He was in the country illegally, and he assumed the name Greenberg because that was my mom's last name. Well, I started wrestling. I started pumping iron, and I really got huge. And I used the name Greenberg, knowing later on that I didn't know who I was, because on my birth certificate, there were four last names. It was Greenberg, Cohen, Sandler, and Weinblatt. So my father took the name Greenberg. I don't know who he was. And then when I was pumping iron, and the guy came to me at the Y where I was training and said, "Hey, how would you like to be a wrestler?" He said, "You're good, you're strong, I've watched you." And he was right. I broke the New York powerlifting record. So now, let's see, what's going to be your name? I said, "Well, it's Hank Greenberg." He said, no, that's not going to work. He said, "You're Hank Daniels, the Minnesota farm boy." I had never been to Minnesota. I never saw a farm. So, and then they dyed my hair blonde, and I was 16 years old. I couldn't get a license to wrestle. You had to be at least 21. So they changed my birth date from October 26, 1941 to October 26, 1931. I suddenly gained 10 years. But I became a pro wrestler, traveling around the country and having the time of my life. No one knew what my real age was.
Let's talk about the opportunity that came to you when Nat Hiken hired you to be Ed Nicholson in Car 54, Where Are You, which holds up so very well all these years later. And Nat was a genius, and this was such a tremendous ensemble cast.
Oh, he was the best. He was a gentleman, very soft-spoken, brilliant. I was brought to him, a friend of mine, his wife was Nat Hiken's secretary. And they got me this interview. I walk in, and I was a cop. I became a cop for about a minute and a half. I'm sitting opposite Nat Hiken, and he looked at me and said, "You're Ed Nicholson." I said, "Oh, no, I'm Hank Garrett." He said, "Just the kind of dummy I'm looking for." He said, "Nicholson is the character that you will be playing on Car 54, Where Are You?" And so that's how I got Car 54. I went from being a cop, a New York cop, for about, seriously, just less than 2 months. And now I'm going to be one of the stars on a television show that became a massive hit. God is good.
And indeed it did. And so much talent in that show. But what was Fred Gwynne like? He was an awfully smart guy.
He was a wonderful, wonderful guy. College grad. I think it was Yale, and he was brilliant. Cartoonist. He wrote and illustrated children's books. Very few people know about that. And he was a gentle soul, tremendously talented, wonderful actor. He created incredible characters and a joy to work with.
There are so many great stories in your book. We're talking with Hank Garrett. His book is From Harlem Hoodlum to Hollywood Heavyweight, but we have to at least share part of the story about making 3 Days of the Condor and how you ended up breaking Robert Redford's nose.
Oh, my God. I'll never live that now.
Especially given what he had done for you in possibly saving your eyesight.
Well, that's the way I repaid him. I was playing. I met the director, Sidney Pollack, and Sidney asked me if I knew anything about martial arts, and I said, "Yeah, I'm in the Karate Hall of Fame." And he said, "Oh, okay." He said, "All right." He said, "You're going to play a guy who's a CIA assassin, but you're going to be disguised as a mailman. That's how you get into different places, by coming in saying you've got delivery." And I do that with Bob, and I try to kill him. And we had this tremendous fight scene. In fact, I wound up winning the New York Film Critics Award for a fight scene. And a few months ago, I was flown to Vegas, and I was presented with an award that said, "The best fight scene in film ever." And so there's a tight close-up shot of me getting a coffee in my face. He takes a pot of coffee and throws it. Now, Bob came out of his dressing room. He wasn't even involved in that particular shot with my close-up. And he saw the pot of coffee, and there was smoke coming out of it. And he said to the special effects guy, "Look, we're not going to throw hot coffee in Hank's face." He said, no, don't worry, because it's not coffee. It's some acid diluted with mineral oil." And Bob said, "Acid?" And the guy stuck his finger in it and said, "See, it doesn't burn." And Bob said, "What happens if you get it in your eye?" And the entire set got very, very quiet. And Bob walked over to Sidney Pollack and said, "Sid, can I throw the coffee?" And Sid said, "Sure, absolutely." He walked over to me and sat up over on the side, Hank, I'm going to hit you with the coffee waist high. And all I want you to do is get your hands up in the air as though it hit you in the face. Well, we did the scene. It was an incredible scene. And he saved my eyesight. We found out later, had it gotten in my eyes, it would have blinded me. Now, how do I repay Bob for saving my eyesight? Well, I go ahead and break his nose.
I understand you you did a stage production of Mice and Men here in the state of Maine with Jose Ferrer.
Oh, yes. He was a wonderful director. Oh, my God. He did Summer Stock, and I played Lenny of Mice and Men. Wow. Wow, did you just bring that back? I hadn't thought about that in years. I was so blessed.
And you did a movie with Sophia Loren and O.J. Simpson. And O.J. ended up, you end up getting hurt because of O.J. Geez, who saw that coming?
Oh, yeah. We movie called Firepower, and we were in the British West Indies shooting. We were there for about close to a month. And the scene is we're in a gift shop, and Sophia's looking at stuff. And I walk in, and I say to her, listen, Oscar, my boss, wants to see you. And she says, when I'm finished. I said, no, he wants to see you now. And she said, well, tell Oscar to wait. I said, nobody tells Oscar to wait. I grab her arm, yank her out, and I'm pulling her out of the gift shop. We come to a car, I throw her in the car, and I'm standing out just outside of reach. And so O.J. comes running by. He's going to rescue Sophia. Now, we rehearsed the scene. All he was supposed to do was put his hand on the back of my head, and I would control the hit. He's supposed to bang my head against the top of the door of the car. But O.J. wanted to play it a little differently. So he grabbed my hair and slammed my head against the edge of the open door, cut me wide open. And they cut me, oh my God. And they ran to my then wife and let her know because she was just a few yards away. She comes running, and when she gets there, I'm lying in Sophia Loren's lap, and she's blotting the blood off my head. And my then wife looked at me, gag was flying out of her eyes, and she looks at me and says, oh, are you comfortable? And I said, well, yeah, I make a nice living. And that was it. She ran back to the hotel, packed the bags, and left. Back to New York.
Hank, before we let you go, I want to take a moment to give you a chance to talk about a dear friend of yours, so very talented, who passed away recently. Can you talk a little bit about Warren Berlinger?
Oh, my God. My dearest friend in the world. He and I traveled around the country doing celebrity autograph shows, and all my proceeds go to disabled vets and the wounded warriors. In fact, the proceeds on my book go to the same group of people, the disabled vets and the wounded warriors. I've been doing that forever. In fact, my manager, Deanna Marie Smith, and I do the shows, and so far we've raised over $60,000.
That's wonderful.
And now we're working on a thing called Hankster's Kids. And what it is, we're creating a place for kids to come to get them off the street. I know what being on the street. I've lived in cardboard boxes. I slept in cardboard boxes or under stairwells. I want to give these kids a place to come to talk to someone. But it's going to be more than that. It's going to be games that they can play. And if they have homework that they're having a problem with or any problems they want to discuss, and if they're hungry, there's going to be food. I knew what it was like to be cold and homeless and hungry. I don't want to see another kid go through that.
Hank Garrett's book is called From Harlem Hoodlum to Hollywood Heavyweight. So many wonderful stories in the book. It has been a remarkable journey so far, and we're so happy to have you visit with us this afternoon, Hank, and share some of those stories. And well, I hope we can do it again down the road. It was wonderful to talk with you today.
I would love to. I'm ready at your beck and call.
Hank, thank you so much. Stay safe, be well, and we'll hopefully talk with you down the road a bit. Thanks again.
Yes, and you can get the book at Amazon under the heading of books. And as I said, the proceeds will go. I couldn't save my son, who was killed in a motorcycle accident. I couldn't save him, but I sure am going to try to save some other kids.
That's great work you're doing. Hank, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hank Garrett with us here on Downtown.